This podcast is from the Overnights program on ABC Local Radio. I'm Tony Arthur. When you're young and have various expenses to keep up with, putting money into your superannuation may not be a priority. But as soon as you creep a little closer to retirement age, you may realise it should have been. Superannuation is currently in the headlines. There's talk of changes to the superannuation system, particularly tax concessions, and there's concern over how super funds will be affected by the current stock market volatility. Plus, there are calls for students to use their superannuation to pay down their university debts. But is that a good idea? Let's ask Kevin Bailey, self-funded retiree and former financial advisor with 28 years' experience. Kevin Bailey, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Tony. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. And thank you very much for getting out of bed to talk to us in the early hours of this Friday morning about superannuation. You think now that you're retired, you would have had enough of it.
I can't help myself, can I, Tony?
Once you have a pet topic of conversation, well, there's no... And we're very lucky that it is, and it's something that you're happy to talk about. Let me begin by asking, Kevin, generally speaking, in your opinion, how effective is the Australian superannuation system as it's currently structured?
Look, despite all of the problems, despite all of the changes they keep on making where they're fiddling with it at the edges and doing all sorts of things, it's one of the most effective systems in the world in relation to, they've got like a three-tiered approach where you've got a safety net with a pension system. You've got the system whereby every worker gets about 9%, just over 9% in fact, is put in by their employer. And also the third tier is where you've got the ability to actually voluntarily put some extra in and get a bit of a tax deduction. And so what we've got is a system which is really the envy of just about every other country of the world. It's very, very effective to help people to really prepare for retirement and to actually put some money aside and have some tax advantages, which, you know, it's not the bee's knees, it's not everything, but it certainly is one of the most effective systems in the world.
Do you think we appreciate how good it is?
Of course not. We're Aussies.
Nothing's ever good enough.
Nothing's ever good enough, absolutely.
Can you talk us through then some of the changes being proposed?
Look, they're proposed. There's always changes being proposed, and you know, one of the changes is that, you know, they're looking to tax people who can afford it more. To, you know, the government is always going to look their greedy eyes, and whichever sort of flavour of government or whatever side, you know, whatever government's in, they're always looking at ways that they can get their hands on more money. And there's a huge, $2 trillion, over $1 trillion of people's money is sitting here in these superannuation funds, which have got lots of tax advantages. And so government is thinking, how can I get my hands on that? How can I tax it and take a bigger share of it? There's been a couple of proposals, particularly for people who have got a lot of money in super. They want to actually tax over and above what they think is a reasonable amount to have in there. And we've had it pretty good in relation to there's no tax on superannuation after retirement. They tax you on the way in at 15 cents on the dollar instead of your marginal tax rate. They tax you with the money that's in there at 15% as well. And at the moment, they don't tax you on the way out. So they can tax you if you take out lump sums over a certain amount. But if you're taking what they call an allocated pension or an income stream, if you're over the age of 60, then they don't tax that at all, and they don't tax you with the money that's still within the fund. And so what they're saying is that if you can take out more than, they've talked $75,000, $100,000, $150,000, they're saying they're going to tax that even more because it's over and above what they would consider is a reasonable amount for most retirees. At the end of the day, they're not going to get that much money from that because there's not a lot of people who've got literally millions and millions of dollars in their superannuation fund. In all the years that I was working as an advisor and advising people, most people have got between about you know, sort of $100,000 and $1 or $2 million in their superannuation fund, and that's, you know, that's a substantial amount of money. Make no mistake, but it's not going to be enough to put most people into the bracket where they're going to have their superannuation taxed on the way out. And so the government has to be very careful not to upset people's confidence in the superannuation system. So before we were talking about, you know, do we realise how lucky we've got it? No, we don't. And if people don't realise how good the system is, then the chances are they're not going to put a lot of extra money in because they're going to be suspicious of the government, you know, touching their money. And so the government's got to be very careful that they don't upset the confidence we've got in the super system.
Kevin, some people think change is a necessary evil. Others wish things were just left alone. But are changes needed to fine-tune the super system as circumstances affecting it change?
Look, I think they've got to fiddle with it at the edges. I suppose I'm one of the ones in the camp that's saying that you don't, you know, sort of don't, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We don't need to change things too much. As I mentioned, you know, governments, you know, seeing, you know, this pool of money growing and growing all the time, they think that they want to get their hands on it. I think there is an element of change adjustment that needs to be done all the time. And so you've got to really just keep it in perspective.
What would you like to see altered?
Well, look, I don't see anything major there. I think the main thing is that I think they've gone too far in saying retirees can only put, you know, $30,000-$35,000 in where they can get a tax deduction after the age of 50. It used to be about $100,000. What they're trying to do is prevent abuse, and I think that's reasonable for the government to try to protect abuse to the taxation system. But there's a lot of people who want to catch up to their superannuation in their 50s, and they haven't got the capacity to do that because the government's got restrictions on how much you can put in and claim as a tax deduction. You still can put in around about $180,000 a year or $540,000 over any three-year period as a lump sum to catch up. So people who haven't got a lot of money in super, a lot of women who've been out of the workforce, for example, a lot of people who just haven't been able to contribute over their working lives and they really want to put a lot more in when they get closer to retirement, I think that the restrictions on the amount that you can put in as a tax deduction probably can afford to be a bit higher than, you know, $35,000, which is the current rule that they've brought in.
There seems to have been a lot of talk lately about the volatility of the share market and its impact on super and savings. Mm. How and why does volatility on the share market impact super?
Well, when you've got superannuation, it's a long-term savings vehicle, so therefore it's a long-term investment. It's for people's, you know, literally for their lifetime. So what happens is when you've got bank interest and, you know, and interest rates in the last, you know, financial year for the cash rate were, you know, extremely low. You know, about 1.7% was the cash rate last financial year, and so people can't just keep money in cash, and so, you know, you've got other types of investment that, you know, you have to put your money into. You know, government bonds have been, you know, an area of fixed interest. You've got property as an investment vehicle. You've got Australian shares and overseas shares. And, of course, the price of Australian shares and overseas shares and property, for that matter, go up and down all the time. And so because super is a long-term investment, they should invest in growth assets as well as people need to invest in growth assets as well as cash and fixed interest investments. And therefore, people get very nervous when the price fluctuates. And so, you know, the price is off, you know, already in the first couple of weeks of this year, this calendar year, we've seen, you know, the prices drop by over 10% or more. And so people start seeing that they extrapolate that. And I think, well, then, you know, if it keeps going at this rate, we're going to lose everything.
Mm.
And so people get very nervous. And so shares, by their very nature, are quite volatile. And so people are constantly watching what's happening to the capital value. But the average of the Australian share market is around about 4% dividends with franking credits, where that means the tax has been paid. So you gross up those franking credits. People are getting a return of about 5.5%, maybe even 6% on average. And then what happens is you get the price going up and down all over the place year by year. And so if we look back over the last few years, the last calendar year or financial year to the end of June, the Australian share market did about 5.5%. But then the year before that it was 17%. The year before that it was 22%. And the year before that, it went backwards by about 6%. The year before that, it was about 11%, then 13%. And then we had the nasty couple of years of the global financial crisis in 2008. And, that was, sort of a drop of over 20% for the financial year. But it was a drop in the financial year of about that. But in the calendar year, things went backwards by over 40%. So people get really worried, and it just goes up and down. The average over the last 10 years or so has been about 8%, which is pretty much what you would expect over the very long term, and that's what superannuation is all designed to be. So my sense of it is that we're only human, but if you're looking at things over rolling 10-year periods, the return averages, a pretty low 10-year period is 8%, which we saw over the last 10 years. And, on the high side, you can get 14-15%. For the last 100-and-something years, the average of the Australian share market has been over 12%. If you focus on what the dividends are and the income is, then you shouldn't really get too caught up. Of course, it's going to be going up and down over time.
But taking all of that into account and the ups and the downs and so on and so forth, should super then be invested in, for example, high-interest savings accounts instead of the share market?
There's no such thing.
Right. Not as high as the returns you're talking about.
No. The thing is high interest savings account have no growth and they just have income. And what happens is, over time, inflation is going to erode the value of your capital and people living in retirement are going to be living, sort of 10, 20, 30, even 40 years in retirement these days, depending on when they retire. So, they've got to have long-term investments that have got a growth component, and that's going to be volatile, and people have got to, really recognise that there's going to be volatility there, and that's part and parcel. The return you get is the reward for bearing risk, and if you want to get a reasonable return, you're going to have to bear a reasonable amount of risk, and that's what we're experiencing at the moment, is the downside of that that coin.
Well, all the super funds want to make themselves look attractive, and we've seen the ads on TV making the claim that the type of superannuation fund you're in can make a big difference to your overall retirement savings. How much of that is true?
Well, yes, it is. It's very true. What you've got, of course, is that fees and charges, as well as taxes, erode a lot of that return that I was talking about. And so what you've got is a situation where we've got a very healthy level of competition. You've got industry funds, which are originally were set up by, the union movement, the big industry funds that have been going, for nearly 30 years now. And for a lot of them, they've got fairly low costs, but they've got no frills as well. They actually invest in the same sorts of things. You've got retail funds, which are run by the big banks and life insurance companies. They're a bit more expensive in the main, and so they have to justify what they charge the extra fees for. Lots of extra bells and whistles, lots of extra services and so forth, which people either need or don't need. And then there's self-managed super funds that people can set up their own superannuation fund. Unfortunately, a lot of people have set up their own funds. They set up the fund and they leave it sitting in cash, and they haven't got a lot of experience of managing it themselves. And so, either that, or they can they start really speculating and gambling on the way they invest the money. But it's a growing area, and a lot of people go and get professional advice and run a self-managed super fund. So it's a bit it's not really self-managed for a lot of people. They've got, you know, their accountant or their financial advisor giving them advice, and they have lots of control over the way that they invest their own money. But then there are extra costs. They've got to pay the accountant fees and the audit fees and all those sorts of things. So there's, you know, superannuation funds, you know, professional management, you know, can actually add quite a layer of cost, but it can add an extra level of security and confidence because it's being managed, you know, right across the board. And a lot of people invest in index funds where they capture the return of the market, where they're not trying to beat the market all the time. And quite often those people can do as well or better than people who are trying to, you know, jump in and time the market and trying to pick stocks and know when to buy and when to sell, because no one can predict the future.
Mm. You're listening to Overnights on ABC Local Radio. Our guest this morning for our talking point on superannuation is Kevin Bailey, self-funded retiree and former financial advisor with 28 years' experience. There's been a lot of discussion about the age we should be able to access our super. What are your thoughts on raising it to 65?
Well, super was introduced in the, I suppose, compulsory super was in the late 80s, you know, with the Accord, the Hawke-Keating years. People had superannuation before that. It was, you know, sort of some, you know, very enlightened employers provided it. The government had superannuation, and it was always seen as something for the privileged. But the age pension was introduced in 1909, I think it was, in this country, in Australia. And at that stage, the average life expectancy of an adult male was about 58 years, and they introduced it at 65 years. And people lived for about an average of 2 years in retirement. What's happened is we've been locked onto that 65 years retirement type thing. And what's happened is people are living a lot longer now. And you know, basically the average, you know, life expectancy is in your 80s now. And so people can often be in super, you know, for you know, sort of, you know, sort of 15, 20 years or 25 years of people, there was a big push, you know, for people to retire earlier. And, you know, I've stopped working in my 50s, and I've got more involved in philanthropic pursuits and in different boards and charities and involved in other areas. And that's great to be able to have the flexibility to do that. But generally speaking, you know, accessing your super early is often something that people want to do if they want to spend their money. And the idea is they think they can spend their super and then go on the pension. We just can't afford it. We've got an ageing population, and we spend over 35% of the government's budget is spent on welfare and age pension and supporting people, and that's growing quite dramatically. When they introduced the age pension in 1909, there was something like 25 or 30 people for every person on the pension. Now it's down to about four. And in 20 years' time, it's going to be down to around about 2.5 or so. So the thing is, super is a long-term investment to put away money for retirement. I think it's sensible that they actually increase the age that you can get access to it gradually over time. And so looking at, you know, 60, you know, it's still, you know, quite young on international standards. You know, they're going to be increasing it up to maybe 65. You don't have to just spend money in super. I can't access my super yet because I'm only 55, and I can't access it till I'm 56. My wife can't access it till she's 60 to access her super. So, you know, super is just a very tax advantage way to put some money aside. We've had to put other money aside separately to that and live off that until we get access to super. And so I think it makes sense to increase the pension age and increase the age that you can access super. Lots of people will disagree, particularly people in manual work. But, you know, the thing is, it's really not to be used just for all the other things that we've got to spend money on, buying a house and paying off your ex debt. All those sorts of things are great, but the trouble is if you keep on spending money for the immediate needs, you never have anything for the long term, and that's what super's designed for.
Yeah, but conversely, a lot of retirees aren't spending all of their super. Many are dying with large balances. Are they just hedging their bets, concerned that they may live longer than their money will last?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's true. You know, when they talk about the average life expectancy, then what happens is half the people are going to die before then and half the people are going to die after that. And so, you know, the thing is that it's, we have to remember it's not the government's money, it's not everyone else's money. Yes, there's been some tax advantages, but, you know, people use it as a nest egg. A statistic I find fascinating is that something like 80% of all the money you spend on medical care is spent in the last 2 years of your life. And so, you know, people are keeping it as a bit of an insurance type policy to make sure that they've got money there in case they need it. And you don't know when you're going to go. So what happens is people are hanging on to it. But, you know, I've seen equally a lot of people who've run out of money or, you know, on the other side of the coin. So I think it's a bit of balance and it goes, you know, a lot of people want to have something for their estate and it's not designed for that. But, you know, the fact is it's their money. And if they want to hold on to it and live off the income but keep the capital intact, you know, good luck to them, but not everyone can do that. Eventually you start, you know, your capital starts whittling away and because you don't know the hour of the day, everyone, you know, most people who, even if they're planning well, are still going to have some money left in super when they actually do die and that goes to their estate, their children or grandchildren or whatever, and that's as it should be.
But at the other end of the age scale, there's talk recently about young people being able to access super to help pay their education fees. Is that a good idea?
That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, the thing is when you leave school and then you know, get into the workforce or, you know, leave uni or whatever, you've got to actually save money for a house. You've got to actually pay off your HEX debt. You've got to pay, if you've got a HEX debt, you know, you've got to pay for holidays. You've got to, there's lots and lots of things that people have got to use money for and spend money for. But every dollar that you put into retirement savings when you're in your 20s is worth a heck of a lot more than every dollar you put into your retirement savings when you're in your 50s because of compound interest. I think Einstein said it was the eighth wonder of the world. And so what you've got is a situation where people are putting money into superannuation to be spending it on HEX debt or to be spending it on things immediately. What you'll find is there's always something that's really important and you get to your 60s and you have no money in your superannuation. And so it's actually a proportion of your savings that you've got to put aside for the very long term. I remember when I was a kid growing up, my mum used to have jars on top of the mantelpiece, you know, where you used to put money for this and money for that and money, you know, we've got to actually think of it as money that you put into a jar that's for the very long term and not touch it and let it stay there. Don't touch it so that it can compound for the very long term.
Some people, for whatever reason, have their super in a number of funds. Should they consolidate them?
Well, depends on what the fees are. The only reason they need to consolidate them is so that they can get their head around where their money is and what it's doing. And if they've got it in a number of different funds, then there's usually, but not always, it can be more expensive. You know, you get economies of scale, you get reduced fees if you've got a very large amount of money in a particular investment fund, and there are minimum account balances and fees, which can be offset. But if it's percentage fees, a percentage of the assets that are being managed, then they can diversify by having, you know, their money spread across a number of different funds. It's easier to manage if you know where the money is and you know what the fees and charges are. You know, you're better off having it into one fund and having it diversified within that fund.
All right. We might open the phone lines now. 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222. Kevin Bailey is our guest on Overnights and our talking point superannuation this morning. Kevin is a self-funded retiree and former financial advisor with 28 years' experience.
The following segment is general in nature and should not be taken as personal professional advice. Listeners should seek their own independent assessment from a qualified advisor and not rely solely on the general nature of information in this program.
Kevin Bailey, before we go to cause a couple of text questions, Maura says, I've been putting money into my super since I came to this country. Still a few years to go working, but now I look at my super online and I see it diminishing by the day. Should I continue to put my money into this volatile system?
It's a natural question that she's got there. Because of what's been happening just over the last few weeks, it's diminishing because the share market has actually gone backwards, you know, quite dramatically over the last few weeks. Now is the time more than ever when you should be putting more money in. The lower the share market goes, the more you put in. You should buy when prices are low, and you should be selling when prices are high. Typically, we do the opposite. The thing is you get more units when the prices are down than when the prices are high. When you know, that's what they call dollar cost averaging. You're putting more money in at a time when the average price is lower. It isn't always going to be going down and down and down. There's going to be years where it goes down, and there's going to be years where it goes up. We talked about that a little bit earlier on. And so the thing is, you know, you've got to invest and put money aside continually. And the beauty of people who are putting money into super on a weekly or monthly basis is that it averages out over time. So, yeah, absolutely, you should keep on putting it in. And don't worry too much about what goes on week by week or day by day or even year by year. You know, it's really looking at what the actual superannuation does over rolling long-term periods. And we're really talking decades, not not years.
KD says, I'm 28. I've got 25,000 in super. Will I have enough when I retire at 9% of my wage, currently $109 a week?
Nope. You won't have enough just at 9%. The 9%, basically, even at 28 years of age, by the time you keep on putting that amount aside, it will give you enough to actually you know, really replace the pensions. What you've got to do is you've got to add little bits along the way. The fact that you've got about $25,000 in superannuation at 28 years of age, that amount is a huge booster to what you're going to have by the time you get into your 60s, because it's going to be compounding as well as the 9% that you're putting aside. But the fact is at some stage you've got to be able to actually add to it whenever you can. And that's why the government gives the ability to actually add and gives you a tax deduction of up to about, you know, sort of $30,000 or so for voluntary contributions. And those are the amounts that really, really help you to have enough to live, you know, with a little bit more dignity and a little bit more comfort over time. And so it was never designed to be the be-all and end-all and have everything that you can actually live really comfortably on. You know, the fact is that you've got to try to actually contribute a little bit extra, as well as, you know, 28, you've got to probably at some stage buy a house. There's a whole lot of other expenses. You know, if you have kids, you know, they're expensive. My wife and I have got 7 kids, so we've seen how much, you know, that takes to raise kids. But the fact is any time you can put extra aside for some superannuation, it just grows to a much greater extent, and it allows you to have much more, you know, many more choices, I suppose, in retirement.
All right, let's go to the first of our callers. Russell has been waiting very patiently online since the discussion started about this, and wants to learn a little bit more about the figure that I want to know what the figure is that the government thinks is an appropriate figure for a normal person to retire on. Russell, good morning. You better put that in your own words.
Oh, well, what more can I say other than that? Mr. Bailey, how are you?
G'day, Russell. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. First of all, I've never heard a blue-collar worker, a manual labourer, turn around and say lifting the pension rate is a good thing. Funnily enough, it's only those who sit for a living.
Yep, now, absolutely. That's what I said, that for the blue-collar work, when I said that you know, we're living a lot longer, a lot of manual workers will say, hey, wait a second, you start to, you know, sort of the aches and pains and the body starts to give in a little bit. And it is tougher for blue-collar workers, there's no question.
Yeah, but there's no fix, because white-collar workers make the decision. But anyway, off that.
Yes.
you work on averages by the sound of it, quite a large amount of what you say. Can you give me the average of a politician's retirement and then give me the average of what they estimate a normal everyday blue-collar worker requires?
Yeah. Number one, the politicians have got a different scheme to the one that the rest of us are involved in, and they actually get a percentage of their salary and so forth. That's actually changed. They had a huge superannuation scheme that actually changed back in the Howard years, back in the early 2000s, where any new politicians coming in are not on that old scheme. So they've got a much more modest scheme nowadays, but still, you know, very, very attractive compared to what the average blue-collar worker is. And so the average, there's no such thing as average. You know, when you've got your head in the freezer and your feet in the oven in the kitchen, you on average, your temperature's about right, but it doesn't explain the experience. But if we're using averages, you know, Joe Average, you know, with 9.25% at the moment, have been putting in superannuation. The employers have been putting in superannuation for you know, nearly 30 years now. You know, the average person, or lots of people, are only retiring with a couple of $100,000 in their superannuation, and that's not going to really do much. They have to rely on the pension as well, and that's one of the things about the system in Australia, is that three-tiered system that I talked about earlier, where you've got the age pension as a safety net. A lot of people are on part pension because they've got some superannuation, and it makes a huge difference. You know, I know my mum, you know, sort of she retired and she got a pension, but, you know, getting an extra $10,000 or so on top of the pension makes, you know, makes the lifestyle a lot better than just getting the pure age pension. So, you know, for a lot of people, if you can live on around about $50,000 in retirement, then, you know, that as a couple, that can really, you know, mean that you can actually cover most of your expenses and so forth. But not everyone can do that. The age pension is, you know, sort of in the 20s. And so, you know, supplementing your pension with some superannuation to bring your income up. And so, you know, there's as many different scenarios as there are people on different wages. I think that's the thing. It's just the ability for you to actually have some spending, discretionary spending. But the problem that politicians have got is they're spending money at the moment and then trying to put money aside, you know, for retirement. It's the same as each of us have got when we've got current expenses in our life, and we've got to think about putting money aside for a rainy day as well. So, you know, there's always going to be a tension there, and that's what you're alluding to.
All right, Russell, thanks for your call. Peter, you think we need to be careful how we view the whole concept of superannuation?
Yeah. There you go.
G'day, Peter.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Look, the super in regards to for public servants was meant to be an endowment system, and then back in the 70s, early 60s or late 60s, yep, they decided to make it a lump sum, allow them to take it out as a lump sum payment. Now, there was a dispute in regard to that, and was resolved by the High Court, saying that because the Act said that it didn't deny you the access. The Act said that didn't say that you couldn't take it out, so they decided that you could. Now, that decision by the High Court was invalid law, because they were, that's never been challenged again, is that they were beneficiaries of their decision, and as such they had to exclude them. So the original Act was quite good. Two people in the
do you have a specific...
Well, they argued that it was going to send the country bloody broke, and they were right. And so that's the problem we have with our pensions and the super, is the fact that there was the public servants system actually has been the problem. This allowing people to take their super in lump sum. And I'd say when it then went to there were some people in the industry had it, people in mining had it, and a few other unions had it. But then when it was introduced in the late 70s. For everybody else, But this allowing to take your money out in lump sums is what the problem is. If it was left as an endowment thing, then we wouldn't have the financial problems we have.
What we've got is a situation where we're talking about defined contributions or defined benefits. The old system, the endowment system, the defined benefit system is where all the risk stays with the employer or stays with the government for whether things go up or down, markets get the return that you hope. And then the defined contribution scheme is the way that we've actually transferred over the years to there's very, very few defined benefit schemes left in Australia or anywhere and all around the world. The point you mentioned was that it sends all the risk is on the employer. In America, lots of the big car manufacturers and so forth have virtually gone broke because they've promised people that they give them a certain amount of money and they're living longer. And so what they're living longer. Investment markets haven't gotten the returns that they used to get. All those sorts of things. And so what we've got is a situation where you give people a lump sum, and then they have got the responsibility to invest it as best they can to actually get the returns as best they can over time and to manage their own situation, and so that the whole system doesn't collapse or go broke. Every individual has got to take that personal responsibility. Some people like the defined contribution scheme because you know exactly what you've got, but then you've got to be responsible for investing it yourself. And so that's the system that we've got at the moment. And the thing is you can buy pensions, annuities from life insurance companies who calculate how much return you can get reasonably over time. But for a lot of Australians, over the last 20, 30 years, people have liked the idea that they're in control of their own destiny instead of having an employer or a government or someone else just giving them an income stream. And so people opt for it. Everyone was worried that they were going to take it all out and blow the money and go on the pension. What's interesting is that most people are quite responsible. I've come across very few people that have actually wanted to just spend it all. People have the opposite problem. I think, Tony, you mentioned that people don't spend enough and then they end up with a large lump sum at retirement, which ends up going to their estate.
Yeah.
So, you've got the whole spectrum of people, trying to actually manage their affairs, but ultimately we've got to be responsible for our own destiny.
All right, Peter, thanks for your contribution. On Overnights, I'm Tony Arthur, filling in for Rod Quinn, and our talking point is superannuation. Our guest is Kevin Bailey, self-funded retiree and former financial advisor with 28 years' experience. Let's go to Tim now. Tim, you have a question about fees charged by financial advisors.
Yeah, I have. Hello, guys. Hey, I'm 48, and I used to be in defined benefit, worked for one company for 25 years, so I've got about, I'll tell you, I'll be on a $350,000 in super. Now, when I was made redundant from the company, I had to move my super out. So at the moment, and it's ain't been 6 months, but I've just gone on, and I'm with Colonial, but my financial advisor takes out, I think on average, about $190 a month in fees for his
service
advice. Mm. Yeah, is that quite high or is that pretty reasonable?
It's pretty normal. Whether it's high or whether it's not is another question. It's a question of what is done for that, whether he or she is doing for that amount of money. It's about $2,000 a year. The cost, I know I was involved in the advice business. I haven't got a dog in the fight anymore, so I can, without fear or favour, talk about that. But I do know that the cost of providing services, if they're provided, that's relatively reasonable for depending on what work is being done. It's very high if they're not doing anything. And the benchmark you can always set is index funds, where the money is actually just managed across the board without having to pay any advice fees or fund management fees. The return they get, are you getting a higher return? Are you getting better services? Are you getting expertise and tax advice and strategy advice and a whole lot of other things, whether you're meeting with the advisor, once every 3 months or once every 6 months or once a year. what sort of things that they are doing for that work, because the competition is such that if you don't get good good service and good advice, then people have got the option to go elsewhere. I mentioned index funds, but also industry super funds, where they don't charge you for advice. You can go elsewhere there. But as a percentage of the amount of money that you've got invested, it's not a huge percentage. Particularly when people are getting a lower return, they start really questioning whether they're getting any value for the advice that they're getting. And so, the thing is there's a whole range of services. There's what they call trailing commissions that get paid. Often they get taken out without knowing. I was a big champion of fee-only advice, where the consumer pays the advisor and just doesn't rely on trailing commissions. But, the fact is there's a number of systems involved, and the question you've got to ask is, what are you getting for that money? And you don't have to pay it. If you could do it yourself, or if you had it in an industry super fund or a self-managed super fund or an index fund, then, you wouldn't have to pay that. So it's a discretionary cost, and people are happy to pay those fees as long as they're getting really good expertise and getting good good advice. Then that's not out of the ordinary, but it is on the on the higher end. But you've got a larger balance, as you mentioned early on. So there's a lot of risk and a lot of if they've got to pay for professional indemnity insurance and all sorts of other things, and if they can actually add some extra value, then that's a relatively reasonable fee for what's being done, and not abnormal. But the thing to be focusing on is what is being done for that cost, and are you getting value for money is really the question you've got to be asking.
All right, thanks, Tim. On the text line, Kerry asks, I'm self-employed and contribute to a salary sacrifice super. How much helps reduce my tax?
How much? Well, about 30, depending on your age, Kerry, what you've got to be looking at salary sacrificing up to about $30,000, $35,000 if you're over age 55, is what you can get as a tax deduction, so per year. So, it's limited these days. It used to be a lot higher. It means that your tax, depending on what your tax rate is, if you're earning over $80,000 and you're getting into the higher tax bands, then 15 cents in the dollar tax is what the superannuation fund pays. And so if you can afford to do it, it's a great way to get a lower tax rate for part of your money that you're saving for the long term.
And on the text line, Pete says, I've worked for three companies that simply don't pay super. It shows on the pay slip but never goes into the fund. The ATO is not much help. Believe me, I've tried. He says, when the company owes too much, they bankrupt, then start a new company. Is there a loophole there that the government needs to close, Kevin?
Well, he's working for the wrong companies. It's against the law, as he's mentioned. But the fact is the ombudsman, the superannuation ombudsman, can be contacted. And just Google, superannuation ombudsman, or you can actually go and chase up your entitlements. They've got only 3 months before they are legally can get into trouble. And every employer has to pay superannuation. And if you've worked for three that have not been paying it, then you've got the right to get onto them, and they're taking the money out of your pay, and they're not putting it into the super fund. It's fraud and it's illegal, and they can have pretty stiff penalties put against them. So the ombudsman is the person to contact to try to get some joy there, rather than just going to the ATO, go to the superannuation ombudsman.
Okay, time fast running out, as it always does on a topic like this, but let's see if we can fit in Murray. Murray, you want to take us to this topic of super funds being available to pay education fees?
Absolutely, Tony and Kevin, and I've dealt with Kevin in the past a long time ago, but I just wanted to say to you that I've made a presentation to Brendan Nelson and his committee of the Education Trading back in the late 1990s, and said that the drawdown from super for education purposes is an absolute must. And I'm 65 now, and I just completed 2 postgraduate qualifications. And I think the investment in the future of education and the knowledge economy is phenomenal. I'd be interested in Kevin's comment, because that's where we go.
And we've got about a minute for that, Kevin, if you don't mind.
No problem. No, look, I think earlier on I had talked about the fact that we do have lots of competing needs and so forth. And one of the problems we run into is when people are drawing money out of their superannuation or retirement savings, which the greatest benefit they have is their ability to compound to actually make money for retirement. And if they're spent on, you know, educational and other needs along the way, people want to pay off their house or whatever, then what happens is there's no money left for retirement. So we need to actually put aside money for education, no question. We need to put aside money for paying off a mortgage, but we also need to put aside money for long-term investment that actually then is able to generate income in retirement. Otherwise, we get caught short on one or the other of those areas. So there's no magic pudding. We've got to actually invest in all areas, but superannuation is for the providing of income in retirement for the members of the superannuation fund.
And fair to say, it's never too soon, you're never too young to start concentrating on your superannuation and putting as much away as you can?
Sure, absolutely. You know, every dollar you put away in your 20s is worth, you know, sort of 5 or 6 times the amount of money that the dollar is put away in your 50s, because it's been compounding for the next 30 years or more.
Okay, terrific. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. Kevin Bailey, self-funded retiree and former financial advisor, 28 years experience, our guest on our talking point about superannuation this morning. And thanks for all your calls and your texts, and apologies to those we haven't been able to get to. And that's another podcast from the Overnights program on ABC Local Radio. I'm Tony Arthur. Thanks for listening.